Good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday night, 7 o'clock, and this is The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. What we are doing in this class, as we've been doing for the last few years, is working our way through a specific book by E.J. Gold, and this one happens to be a book entitled The Hidden Work. It has been an enormous voyage, this particular book, and my position on it is that this particular book represents and has represented for me over the years, actually, the third part of the series that E.J. Gold started with The Human Biological Machine. Then he goes on to Life in the Labyrinth. And then, even though he is not saying that this is the third part of that series, he never actually issued the third series as a book, and there were a number of attempts at issuing what he called the third series, but it never concluded. But from a practical point of view, for me, this works in that regard. So even though many people can come to this class and just include themselves in the class, in this effort that we're making without the background, it is we stand upon the work we've done in all of our lives, in our spiritual work. We've studied many, many, many things. We've done many personal efforts that we've put in, and all of that comes to bear in an event like this. So, Human Biological Machine, Life in the Labyrinth, and now The Hidden Work. And within The Hidden Work, we've made our way through chapter 12. Chapter 12 is called Octaves. It has been a very, very fruitful chapter for us. It's intellectually difficult because, on the one hand, it's married to a great deal of discussion about the octave. And that's a classical form of conversation in all of the Gurdjieffian material. Gold, in The Hidden Work, speaks of it more energetically. And so we're actually working in a way where we're working with the subtleties of energy, and it's been very, very fruitful. So I want to say a couple things before we get started into the chapter again. First of all, if there's anybody, a few weeks ago we posted the idea of doing a particular type of an exercise. And the exercise was to attempt to watch your own mechanicality, but watch it in terms of a energetic. And Ivan's been away a few times, but we've had some what I consider remarkable sharings from individuals who have done the exercise and brought it up, and that it was very expansive for the class as they described the events that went on with them. And some of those are posted on the website wingsofchaos.com. So, but if anybody have something that they'd like to share in that regard, if they're working with that exercise and they want to share the energetics of it, then post that in the log or come on the line, on the phone line, and we can work in that way as well. But for the moment, we'll just proceed. And normally we just continue forward in the chapter, but this time we're going to go backwards. that's because
I had to
take a step back on something that was very important that I don't think we spent enough time on. Susan, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say I did have an experience with the energy in watching it. Can you hear me?
No. Can you I don't know, can you speak closer?
Try that again.
Yeah.
So I did have an experience of watching the energy in that exercise.
Okay. Are you, would you like to bring that up now, or is that something?
You were saying if anyone, I don't know, if you would like
yeah.
to hear it now or post it into the log. Not too long.
Why don't I do this? What I'd like to do is I'd like to start with laying out a particular element in the chapter, and then we'll turn to that, your experience. Does that make sense? Is that okay?
That's great.
Okay. All right. And Ivan, where we're gonna go back to page 126, bottom of 126 and 127, and some things that are on 128. Okay. I'm gonna share just something that occurred. When I each week I have to update the website and I have to send out an email, which I do. And I think most people get that email. Whether you read it or not is a different story, but I send it out. And I have to then decide what am I going to write in the email, because I have about two paragraphs worth of attention that I think that I can capture from the reader. So knowing that that's what I have, I have to determine what am I going to say that is useful, because that might be the only communication someone gets regarding the human, the hidden work. But and so I started writing it Monday. I just couldn't get it. Couldn't get where to go. And then I read the chapter over again. I read certain parts of it. And then it hit me what to do. It was real clear, but it happened about 3 in the morning that supposed clarity came. So I got up and I wrote it. And I wrote it, and it was real clear to me what I wrote and why I wanted to write it. Then I hit the send button, and when I hit send, it's going to go to about, I don't know, 30 people, 40 or 35, something like that. And then I went back to get some more rest. I got up, and I started thinking about the email, and I thought it was gibberish what I'd written. I thought, I don't think I did it. I thought, what did I even write about? And it was confusing to me. So my question to the group is, why was it so clear and distinct at 3 a.m. in the morning, and then at 8 in the morning, when I began thinking about it, I got nervous that it was so filled with gibberish and it made no sense. The fact is, maybe it made no sense. I don't know.
Why don't you ask for feedback on that?
Well,
or are you not asking?
I'm actually not. I don't.
No. Okay.
So Aria is saying she has that question often. So good. So she'll be part of our expert on that. I don't know if she's on the phone or not, but I'm gonna hold her feet to the fire on that one. So. Why is it that that occurred? So Jana is saying I was a different David. Good.
It sounds suspiciously like buyer's remorse.
Buyer's remorse, Ivan is telling us. That's Ivan. The sender's remorse.
Yeah, a related syndrome.
Type that in there. So Dan suddenly is saying, piping up, he's saying, I must have been in a different state. The Spirit moved me to do something, Jana is saying. But what do they mean? What does Dan even mean when he says that? I was in a different state. It was me, right? I'm the guy.
There's a big energetic or vibrational difference between these various states, especially when you're talking about 3 a.m. I mean, it's reminding me of the status of a dream state, where you say, no matter how lucid you think your dream is, I mean, you know, that's like this memorable thing that happened to me where I wrote down, you know, I had this dream about this long scroll unrolling with this brilliant, incredible piece of writing on it and so on, and luckily I jumped up, I woke up in the middle of the Eureka, and I started writing and all that. And I got up in the morning, and I actually couldn't read it. It made no sense at all. So that was a similar kind of...
It was a different energetic. In my case, it did make sense.
Yes.
A comment, Lost Horizon, he said he was in a different state when he was writing it than when he read it later.
Okay, so... what does that mean? It was the same guy. It was me, right?
But you were open to a different state of energy.
Ah, so maybe I was open to a different state of energy. So why was it clear in one and then not clear in the other?
Well, when you're awakened, it is different. It is clear.
So that brings us to the topic for this evening.
Well, who said the same thing?
Pianjo
said the same
thing. Pianjo. Okay, I'm just going to go. First of all, we skipped over the whole thing. At the bottom of page 126, actually the paragraph, the full paragraph on the end of it, it's starting with, it is not necessary to know. You there?
Yes.
Okay. It is not necessary to know every little detail of a thing in order to actually use it. That's critical. Contrary to what is usually taught in places so-called of higher learning, university training will not help you here. In our work, nobody cares if you ask a question, just to ask a question. But one must be able to ask a real question. And it's the, what is the substance of a real question? What forms some of the basis of something that you know is a real question? Now, this exercise that we're doing and the work we're doing in this class is not to discover a new philosophy, but to point out the energetics that occur as you go throughout your day. All I'm doing is I'm a tour guide on one of those buses, you know, like a double-decker bus in London, and points things out. So I'm just that. I'm hired to do that. I have a little microphone around my neck, and I say, there's Winchester Abbey. Here's the such and such.
Big Ben.
Here's Big Ben, and here's the London Bridge, and so on and so forth. And Isaac Newton is buried over there, and Shakespeare lost his shirt over here.
Really, every corner.
So, but it brings it to life when we do that, doesn't it? When we point out the things that are going on all the time. I'm not trying to discover a new philosophy. I'm just pointing out what occurs. So what is the basis that is and creates something called a real question? What makes something real? What makes something a real question for you? Everybody has that answer. what makes it real? What do we, does anybody on the log would like to begin answering that? Just to confuse things here, I'm going to call a stop to this right now for a moment. Susan, Susan can no longer really do the phone monitoring and the chat monitoring. She's just, you know, she has other focus that she would like to take when she's in the class. She can no longer do that. I consider it important to me to have somebody able to read the dialogue and be on the phone to do that. What do you think we should do as a group now because of that? Good. What do you think we should do? Nothing? We could let Dan try to read it, and then Ivan and I have to try to repeat it into the phone.
Hey, David, listen, I'm willing to volunteer. You know, I'm here on the phone every night and every Wednesday night in any event. And although I like to participate silently,
yeah.
I know what our situation is, so I'm happy to volunteer.
Thank you for that, and I want to honor what you would like to do. George gets on the phone every time and is available to us for years to give us particular guidance and stuff like that. And he's chosen mainly to do that job, but to do it in a silent manner. I'm kind of asking, let's say he continues to hold the post that he has in the manner, should someone else move forward to take that post? I guess I'm suggesting, should someone other than Susan and Silverdale call in, though Silverdale might fill in this evening, and maybe we can leave it at that. But I post that, I pose that issue to the group. I believe that the group needs to have someone doing it. Susan has done a masterful job. She would like to have a different post now. Or a group of individuals working as a single group, or individuals working as a group, and she's asking for something to be changed. She's continuing to do a job even this evening, but she's saying, what could be different? Am I getting that right, Susan?
Yes, you are.
Okay.
I am asking for help, and it's certainly been a learning experience for me, so I can kind of sell the job, because you really get to...
I can't hear you, Susan.
Oh, you really get a chance to be more awake. You have to pay more attention. And so... I've learned a lot through it. And also, the Pianjo thing, perhaps we can share the task. And like one day someone could take it, one day George, one day Pianjo. And Simon says it's a good idea to take turns.
Okay. So why doesn't George and Susan can do it this evening, unless somebody would like to come on and start working in that manner, and then somebody actively volunteer to do it next week. In other words, we won't leave it to chance that someone might do it.
Well, now Musil Spark says, I'll do it the week after Pi, Pianjo, if that's acceptable.
What's spelled Spark?
Okay. So that requires you to call in. You're on the phone for about an hour and 20 minutes. You'll be listening to me, and you have to pay attention to know when you need to read a comment. Some of the commentary in the log is just a back and forth between two individuals about something, and it may or may not be relevant to the class. And then you have to have the balls to interrupt me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or Ivan, if one of us is talking, say, wait a minute, here's something important. Or someone's posing a critical question. Okay, so one of you can let me know by email who's going to do it next week. And then the interesting thing will be to report on your experience doing it. It's actually not as simple as it sounds. Right, Susan?
Right. And I'm seeing that Aura's volunteered for a week, and Tianjo.
Good.
So, and Simon is offered the week.
So Tianjo will do it next week. And then work out between you who will do it which week. And part of what will occur is sometimes I'll have a feeling that there's something on the log that needs to be read, or I might ask you a personal question too. So all of that's part of the mix. And so let's just take it as it is. And I want to just verbally thank Susan for that work, because it is a special, particular job. And it's highly associated with the topic this evening. And I don't know if anybody answered the question, what is the basis for a real question? Were there any answers to that, Silverdale, or?
Yeah, Aria says, a sincere and earnest inquiry from essence, not ego or self-importance. So an and Jim H. says, an essence question is
okay.
A real question. And those are the two responses we've gotten so far.
Okay. And then I come back to you, Aria and Jim. What is it? What do you mean by an essence? What gives rise to an essence question? You know, it's like, I really need to know what's on TV tonight because it's really critical for me.
Yeah, really.
It is?
What time does it?
I don't want to miss
serial episode start.
I don't want to miss my show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've actually heard people refer to a television program as my show. And it gave me pause when I heard that. So is that an essence question? Because I really, 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 really want to see Dancing with the Stars. I don't know if that's still on TV.
And Jim H. likens it to inspiration, which is a question that happens outside of the ego.
It's something that happens outside of the ego.
Probably arises outside of ego.
But Dan is saying it feels like life or death.
Well, this is what, the next couple of paragraphs,
what?
Talks about it in here. Jenna?
Okay, so.
He does talk about the features of this.
What are the conditions of a real question? And then skipping ahead, for one thing, having a real question means the correct choice of subject matter. Of course, the subject of the question must be something necessary to your work. Not just your work in general, but literally to your work at the very moment. A real question is also something which you must examine immediately without delay. And we're going to refer back to my old favorite Spinoza, who, when he says, after experience had taught me that all the usual surroundings of social life were vain and futile, and then he goes on in this improvement of the
mm-hmm.
understanding, he says he examined the fact that the pursuit of riches was futile. That the pursuit of money and riches and ego and fame, that these were futile things along with the pleasures of the flesh in themselves. And then he literally says, I thus perceived I was in great peril.
That's a good perception.
He realized that he was in deep peril at that time. I'll try to remember to post that whole commentary that he did. It's quite moving. And once he realized he was in deep peril, he did something about it. And that, for him, was a real question. And it was based upon the necessity of him finding a solution. I happen to know that several individuals that are on tonight, I actually don't know who's on, but I think I know a couple of people, who have had issues of great necessity during the last month or two. And those issues are what give rise to a real question. Those are real questions of which the solution is within you. And the group is there to help us understand if we are caught. Maybe your question is, I'm lost. Maybe that's all you can say.
Well, this qualification is very significant here, that to me anyway, as a fairly mental person, it's not a real question. It's not a question about theory or principle at all. It's a question that's rooted in your own issues and your situation, you know, related to going
ahead. Path World has a really good comment here. She says that it's kind of in the form of a question, but it's also a statement. Would a real question mean that you are willing to work with the answer for a period of time? So often when we say, well, there's a question, there's an answer, but maybe it's a suggested possibility for an answer which we work with over time to clarify it to ourselves and apply it as appropriate.
At the point of being at the moment of a real question, for our small, believe me, very minuscule, small individual lives, that is equivalent. It can actually be at that moment, Pathworld and Hockley and others, you can be at that moment, it's as if you are on surrendering at that moment. That's a surrender to the universe. And you're surrendering. It's as if you are on the cross at that moment. If you stand in the position of, I don't know, and I don't know where I am.
Mm-hmm.
I do not know. And if you voice that, which is what several individuals have done in the last couple of weeks, and we'll hear from Susan in a little minute, is put themselves in that position. Jim H. shared an experience he had, but I would imagine that the conversation we all had around that after he shared it also expanded it quite a bit. And it gave him something to work with, as I think it did for Pianjo and Aria and Hawk Lady. They have a kernel on which to work. And something else occurs when you are in that moment of acquiescence and surrender. It's hard to allow yourself to be there. At the same time, if your life really depended upon fixating your attention on this question, top of 127, it would automatically produce the necessity to continue asking the question until it was answered, which may require years or even centuries for clarification, and even then, nothing is final. So it's an energetic mood more than anything. Can you allow yourself to be in the moment of necessity? I think I told you the story about when I was in an isolated situation for about 7 days, 5 to 7 days. I think it was, I can't remember now. this is in West Virginia. I was in a cabin. And after 3 days, during the first 3 days, it's like a form of insanity. It was all kinds of interesting things happened. But then that left, and there was a certain simplicity. I was very interested in how we know things, which I'm going to get to in a minute. But when I was in that space, the thing, I had a burning question. This was 20 years ago, maybe 30 years ago now. And the question had to do, am I on the path? Am I on the path? And maybe in a certain way, that's a theoretical question, but I guarantee you it was not theoretical for me when I was in that hothouse of reflection for those days. And it has become a central question for me. Like right now, this second, am I on that path?
Centrum of gravity question, by definition, I think.
Thank you, Ivan. It's exactly the centrum of gravity question for me. And and what you find when you find that question for yourself is you find that you start moving away from normal behavior, because behaving just right certainly is not the answer. Sometimes you have to take risks that are where the behavior doesn't seem right in order to be on the path. Sometimes you have to take a bite out of the apple from the tree that's been offered to you. And when you do that, your ship tacks away from normal life and you are in a different place. That nevertheless is a path. And Silverdale and I have struggled with this question for years. And at a certain point, there's no one to tell you the answer to that. No one. You have to rely on yourselves and your own intuitions and your own depth of consciousness and the personal integrity, whatever it may be for you. Now, you can roll it out in a class like this and test it every once in a while.
Yeah, I think of this as the, I'm not sure if my, let's say my definition is the shared definition, but I understand this as gnosis, what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there is no, nobody can certify for you what you have certified, what's the gnosis, what you have gnostically determined, or what you are striving with on the path. It's like it's your discovery, your experience as experienced by you, let's say. And you could share that, but it's, there's no certification that I know of.
They're very rare, but you can. There are ways to test it. But you have to test it in certain arenas. You can't just test it anywhere. And we understand the stories are filled, the stories of spiritual work are filled with people falling into self-delusion. So that's always there too. You know,
we're nearby, right?
That's always sitting there. Am I on the path? So a real question came forth for me, or was formulated during that period of time in West Virginia, that is just as fresh today. So jumping ahead, I'm going to skip the baking of bread paragraph, Ivan, which you've referred to a few times. The sly way, the cunning way, is to understand not from below, in fact, one at a time, but to increase necessity, which is to say, to be given everything necessary in importance of the obligation which you have accepted as your part of the work, which is to say, to be given everything necessary in accordance with the obligation which you have accepted as your part of the work. We'll let that bake for a couple of minutes, but I want to turn to Susan. Do you want to share what you have to say, or are there comments that need to be shared at the moment?
Well, what I was going to share was an experience. It was kind of a body energetic experience. And I happen to be like a knuckle cracker. And I have basically great relief, like between my thumb and my neck. And so
yeah, great.
Can you speak a little louder?
I'm speaking pretty loud. Is this any better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. So pretty much if I'm feeling pain in my neck, I can relieve it by like cracking my thumb.
Okay.
And so it's just like an instant way to relieve that tension. And so I decided in this exercise that I'm going to go ahead and watch what happens with the energy when I don't interfere. And it's pretty amazing because, like, I could feel the energy just pulsating back and forth between my neck and my thumb. And usually I would just go ahead and dissipate that energy and allow it to go free. But then to feel it build up and just go back and forth was a different experience. And then it finally, you know, the energy finally kind of burned itself out and settled down.
Okay.
And so I've been working with that as far as, trying not to intentionally change it.
Right. What happens when you don't relieve the pain?
It seems to shoot back and forth between the shoulder and the thumb.
Yeah, an acupuncturist would love to get their hands on you.
Right.
I'm sure it's some energy path within the body. That's
right, it's
moving.
A blockage.
Yeah.
And then I can, you know, by, you know, cracking the knuckle, I can relieve that, and then the energy will go flowing out.
Huh.
It instantly is better. So,
okay.
So anyway, I'm just working with sitting with it, feeling it, instead of bailing out. I kind of was looking at it like a little octave, like if you start an octave, you can either go through it, or at some point you just bust out. And so
what do
by,
you mean by, you said go with it or what?
You go through it.
You either go all the way through the octave, or you kind of bust out the sides.
What happens if you bust out the side?
Yeah.
Well, like if you went all the way through an octave, you would go towards a higher octave.
Right.
But if once I started the feeling in the neck, if I were to let it go and not relieve it by cracking the knuckle, I would make it through that and go away. But if I were to relieve it by cracking the knuckle, then that octave can never be finished. Is that anywhere? Do you know what I mean? Am I off base?
Well, you're not off base. No, we're just ruminating.
Yeah, I mean this sounds like an ongoing process of discovery for you.
Yeah.
Is this kind of an experiment that you're engaged in, would you say?
Well, it's just kind of what I'm doing with the exercise of observing tension and not intentionally changing it.
Right.
And so this is one, I mean, I'm trying different things, but this is just one thing that I've tried and then I'm just working with it.
Good.
So, yeah.
So, Silverdale, do you want to read Jim H.'s comment?
Yes, I do. Of course, you know, I have a question mark on this. But anyway, Jim H. says, one of Fritz Perl's Gestalt experiments to put attention on pain or tension. That is, to allow it to develop and see what arises.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, Fritz Perl, you know, up there in Canada, was apparently had a high degree of attention. And so he would put the, and Gurdjieff recommends the same thing. If you've developed your attention, you can place it on the disharmonized part of your body and dissipate it, so that it goes into the general set of the whole of our vibrations.
Right. Good. Okay.
I think I have experienced mildly that there's, you know, that sometimes in the case of chronic aches and pains, you know, something that's recurring, that there is a trauma, there is some kind of a story or a background, you know, an energetic story that's caused that to be stored in the body like that. And, you know, I think that EJ has written about this in The Human Biological Machine, and I think we've talked about it, you know, that there's a way to release these anomalies in the electrical field by going into them, you know, by delving, sort of putting your attention on what that anomaly is. I'm not sure that this is what Susan's pain is that she's talking about.
I'll tell you, Simon Templar reminds us that in Practical Work on Self, I'm just looking at it now, Chapter 23, is radiation of pain. Sensations of pain and pleasure can be used as reminding factors. They can provide the force for the awakening of the machine. And Mark Roach says, same reasoning, it would seem for attention on the machine in general rather than changing it, that is to awaken it. But I'm telling you, it's no fun to experience pain, even if it's in service of awakening the machine.
That's exactly right. And I think that another thing to possibly observe, Susan, because to me this feels like it's a physical, mechanical pain that you need to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're dealing with it properly. As you observe that phenomena, also observe the idea, is there a matrix that suddenly comes down emotionally, like psycho-emotionally, that also winds up getting associated with this.
That would be the one in the human biological machine.
That would be more like that, and possibly, so anyway, so just does something else come up? I think you're doing the right thing. I think you need to relieve it because it just sounds like it's a physical thing that needs to be worked with. But does baggage come along with it?
Right.
So you might want to take a quick look at that as well as it proceeds. Okay?
Yeah, and I can see when it started and how it progressed. So
speak more clearly into the phone because we didn't hear that.
I said I can see when it started and how it progressed.
Good.
So, I mean, there definitely is stuff surrounding it.
Yeah. There always will be. I mean, that's just how stuff is, and we're loaded with it. But our objective is not to look at the infirmity so much as how we awaken the machine and get out of that whole matrix of the historical personality.
Right.
Start working in a different way, which is what we're doing tonight. So this idea is, but to increase necessity, that's where we were. And one, what can you do to increase necessity? And then I'm going to, before I start to answer that a little bit, I'm going to read the next paragraph. We may become curious about these ideas, but until we agree to accept a greater obligation than the necessities given to us by regular organic life, we have no necessity for the understanding of these ideas, which apply only to a higher set of laws than those under which we ordinarily live. If, on the other hand, note well this, if, on the other hand, we accept a greater obligation, an obligation toward the absolute, which alone produces a real work necessity, only then can we begin to understand something of these ideas. And the thing that's unique there is that the author is telling us, he's saying, this is a form of how we get to understand something. It's a method of knowing. Mm-hmm. Knowledge comes at that point. So when I was sitting there at 3 a.m. in the morning, I literally was had a different level of necessity formed, not by the email, by the way, but by the clarity of my thinking, that I was at the necessity of that and to express it. Literally put me, as several people indicated, in a different energetic space. In that space, a different level of knowledge was actually available to me.
It's a good formula.
It's a good formula, and we are literally, this is that area of philosophy of how we understand something. It's called phenomenology, epistemology, rather.
Mm-hmm.
And that we won't go there. But anyway, it's just called, how do we know something? When we work together, and I remember very clearly what Jim H. said about the class last week, that there was a energetic tone to it that hadn't been there before. At that moment, there was a form of knowledge that was available to us directly. I maintain that even when you fall asleep again and you lose that space, you don't lose that essential information that has come to you. Because you've put in the energy to get here. There was a necessity that you even came to this class. Some people are very tired, they're late at night, and so on and so forth. But you come anyway for this. And that puts us in a different level of energetic. That is the principle of working with necessity.
There I am present.
And Dan is quoting. Go ahead.
Where two or three are gathered in my name, two or more, there I am present.
So if we come with a necessity together with true intent to establish a space such as this, that element of necessity, we could, I don't want to get into a whole thing about alchemy, but we are creating alchemical substances that are creating an atmosphere, and that's created through our each all of our individual necessities coming together, and that's allowing us to penetrate knowledge that we could not have penetrated on our own. That was the most important thing that I wanted to express, is this: it's literally a method of getting knowledge. And Arya, I know, and Simon, we've talked about all the Castaneda material, and that's partly what happens, is that Don Juan takes Carlitos into different levels of energy, and then knowledge is available there. It's what we are doing here. It doesn't have the panache of the, of you know, different chemicals, you know, the drugs that he was using, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, you know, you just reminded me of the, again, one of my favorite, one of the episodes that really has stays with me from reading many years ago, the Castaneda books, or the early ones, this question when the Castaneda asked Don Juan, he says, well, you know, I'm taking notes. I'm keeping this notebook and I'm taking notes and I'm supposed to write this PhD thesis and I'm going to go, what do you mind if I go and write this huge article and share this with other people, all of this esoteric knowledge and so on you're giving me? And Don Juan says, you know, what do I care? Let me show you something. And he takes him, he marches him out in the desert, and he says, I'm going to tell you, like, the most important, you know, the most critical and significant esoteric secret that I could possibly reveal to you. And he tells him, look in the east, and look in the west, and look in the north, and look in the south. It's okay. Every direction that you're looking at, you're looking into infinity. It's an infinite panorama that you're seeing in each one of these directions. And he says, okay. Then he takes him back to the cabin, I think, or whatever it is. He says, okay, write this down. And have you written that down in your notebook? Good. Now, what are people going to do when you tell them this? What is this going to mean to them? What is it? How does it translate? Well, what use is it to them for you to convey that knowledge? Useless. Means nothing to them. Anyway, I always remember. And I think it's in the same category as what you're talking about, because it's like Don Juan is saying, I'm transmitting this teaching to you. Here, there it is.
That's right.
This is you're looking into infinity. Now, you can write that down in your notebook if you want, but what good is, you know, what happens when you tell that to some other person in a coffee shop or in a university class? It means nothing to them.
And of course, Carlos did that.
Yes.
And I was actually at UCLA exactly at that time.
Yes, right.
And however, yeah. Here's what happens. And it's throughout philosophy and literature that this is discussed, actually. What happens is you share something you got from this space to somebody who is not in that space nor willing to go to that space. And they take the knowledge and they translate it into the space into which they now sit.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us like to hear these ideas and they go, oh, you want to, like, get a little feel up for it. It feels so good to hear this. This is so nice. It's the work of staying in a space like this and the necessity that you have for being in this space that brings the knowledge, not the chain of words or literature that may follow it. So once again, what is the real question for you? What was the last thing I put in the email? Do you have it up, Ken? Copy that into the log, that last section there. Yeah, right there.
How can I put myself in a position such that my evolution is a necessity for the work?
Ever heard that before, Ivan?
Yes, I've heard that before. This is also, I periodically urge people to listen to a talk called Mastering from Above, which is very strongly related to this octaves chapter.
Mastering from Above.
Yeah.
And that we get through with Talk of the Month.
I think on, .com.
Talkofthemonth.com.
I'm sure that it's available on CD or streaming, I think, now.
Oh, really?
I think you can download the talks now. Isn't that right?
Okay. I'll go check that out, too.
Yeah.
And
only the best CDs? Well, anyway, we can consult Marvette about this also.
So Jim H. says, the hidden work is not hidden when the energetics are right. That's precisely what I wanted to, that's the point of this, the necessity. If you, and this is a very important point, if you can engage with the necessity that is within you, and I can feel it in certain individuals right now, I can feel the specific necessity that you have. If you can engage into that necessity, it will make your path clear. If you run from it as desperately as you can, it will come around on the guitar next time anyway.
Really?
Some individuals are meant to do teaching, counseling, etc. with others. Some individuals are meant to write. Some individuals are meant to
do handicrafts, like artifacts.
Artifacts, handicrafts, music, dance. But there are other individuals that are meant to do other things in a particular manner. And a lot of it is allowing yourself to engage with your own necessity. Okay? So that's all I have. I don't know if anybody else has anything, other questions. Then the next four pages actually, we will cover next week, because I do want to get into this, the next part of what the next form of prayer absolute is. Don't forget, prayer absolute is just a technique that we use to help ourselves access the spaces that we're in now. Like if you happen to be driving tomorrow and you're going somewhere, like to San Francisco, how can you keep yourself in a space like this to the extent that you're able to? What can you do to keep yourself going? Yes, we can. There's a reason I don't want to make a habit of reading the prayer every time, because we're not quite ready for that. Because if we do it and it becomes routinized, then it's just the habit that we do. But what's your thoughts? Should we read it?
We should just have a moment of contemplation.
Okay, let's just go with that. We'll go with that. So we'll contemplate the prayer, look at the prayer. It's carried around in your back pocket. Or maybe I should say carried around on your iPhone nowadays, right?
Hopefully we've memorized it.
And some people have even, to the extent that they're able, you can memorize it and then you get reminded of it at the strangest time. Then you walk right into it. And it's amazing when you use that, put in the effort to memorize it, and you just walk right into it at that time. Okay? So that does it pretty much for this evening. We'll come back and actually finish chapter 12 next week, I believe.
You think so?
I believe so. And others are saying good luck. And I appreciate and I want to emphasize how much I enjoy working with each of you. And it's really quite a delight. And I want to thank everybody. I want to thank Silverdale and Susan for helping so much on the phone this evening as well. So we'll look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you.
Thanks, David and Ivan.
Well,
thank
and
you,
I wanted to say thank you to everybody. A very swift call. Everybody is so willing, and I just appreciate it so much.
Thank you, Susan.
Good night, Susan.
Good night, Susan.
All right, good night.